Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Bart Kans, and I'm a professor of civil procedure and civil law at the University of Leiden. And together with my colleague, Professor Anna Nylund, we conducted the research, Civil Courts Coping with COVID-19. We set out in October 2020, and the results were published in spring of 2021.
I think as a researcher, one makes understands the world through doing research, and this kind of understanding what was going on during the early days of pandemic made our lives for the participants in this research project easier, because we could understand what was going on and we could contribute, or at least feel that we contribute to the world as it was at that time. And we did a study that was very brief and published in April 2020, Bart Kranz and I, with 15 states. And I think it was this kind of gyro gear loose attitude, you know, the inventor figure from Donald Duck, and then moved from there. And we very soon then understood that the world would be in living through the pandemic for a long time, and it would be a very volatile situation. So in August 2020, we decided to embark on a new, more in-depth, a more real research project. And so we approached colleagues across the world, and we got yeses from 23 countries, including our own, that's the Netherlands and Norway. And these countries are across five continents. It's civil law and common law. It's small and large states. It's affluent and less affluent, federal and unitary states. And we decided to proceed without a questionnaire. So just asking the authors who are experts in their fields to write on a topic that's interesting to them, how courts have responded to the emergency, to the pandemic, and to write on the new normal, because we understood that the new normal would not be the post-pandemic new normal, but during the pandemic sort of equilibrium, sort of normality. And this was a very explorative study and dynamic setting, and we knew that Nobody knew what was coming around the corner. And thus, it was important to catch developments as they were coming and also see the variety in them, and realize that these experts, when they talk about something that's important to them, we start to see patterns. We cannot say that because this author didn't mention this issue, that it doesn't exist in that country. So we cannot quantify things, but actually, through this open approach, we can find stuff that we would never have thought of with had we constructed a questionnaire, because the authors and together we are much smarter than we are each individual of us. And we had to move very fast forward with the short presentations, so they don't go into depth, and yet I think we have an immensely rich research materials that gives us hints into sort of what is happening across the world and what is going on and some important development. Today, I would want to focus particularly on one thing, and that is online hearings. And I think we see sort of two-pronged development, to simplify a little bit. And one is that we see countries that have made a successful transition into remote hearings. And of course, it has not been unproblematic by no means, but still, in these countries, remote hearings have become everyday phenomenon. And the second group is countries that have resisted oral remote hearings and then reverted back to more written proceedings. And often these are countries such as Poland and France, just to mention two, that have already before the pandemic had strong written elements in their hearings. And you also see some countries where judges have postponed many hearings, and that's even more problematic as the situation has continued over a very long time. And one way of describing success in remote hearings is the availability of technology. And it's not just what was in the courtrooms, because a lot of judges, they more or less literally ran into the next shop to buy a web camera and microphone. But it's also, for instance, in countries like Germany, where many judges live in areas with a poor internet connection in terms of that it cannot, it's not stable enough, strong enough to support a remote hearing with video and image moving both ways. And the other thing is that some judges had already some experience with remote hearings, maybe not entirely remote hearings, but perhaps investigating, examining witnesses, experts, etc. And these judges then had an advantage, a competitive advantage in this regard. And then an important issue is the attitude or the mindset of judges and their willingness to experiment with new technology. And in this regard, it's very important to also have the legal counsel on board. Because if they are also willing to contribute to this, and they understand that this judge is not going to make a perfect job, but it will be much better to have this hearing now, and then the legal counsel will be at his or her home, and this is where all Norwegian lawyers now know what you use an ironing board for. It's when you stand up to address the court, you get this high table, that's your ironing board, to actually mimic what's going on in the courtroom. And then we need to sort of also understand that everybody's going to make mistakes and everybody's going to simply just improvise. And it's also a matter of making adjustments. We saw in Australia that the judge simply said that there cannot be jury trials during the pandemic. It's much too difficult to have a jury and to actually make sure they're listening in to everything that's being said. So it's better to just move forward without jury trials. In the US, that was not possible to do because they have a constitutional right to jury trial, and thus that would have required consent. And unless the parties consent to foregoing a jury trial, it's not possible to move forward. And this, in this regard, we also see that in some countries, courts have proceeded either to send away cases to mediation or then having more mediation as a court service and even judges promoting settlement, because that might be easier to achieve in a remote hearing with because then there are less people present. You don't have to have witnesses, experts going in and out of the room. And a final thing that I find interesting, we see some patterns that might hint to geography as an issue. And I think the Netherlands is, in a way, an extreme example in this regard as a very densely populated country, whereas Norway is the other opposite, with a very sparsely populated country and also one with a very challenging geography. And that, of course, makes Norwegian judges and lawyers more prone to accepting remote hearings, because if the road is closed due to lots of snow, or if your witness has to travel three ways one way to attend a court hearing for 20 minutes or half an hour, then you see the value of remote hearing and remote examination in a completely different manner than in, let's say, the Netherlands or Denmark. And then a few words that we have about our experiences regarding remote hearings. And one thing is that what we see is that people are concerned with the mental distance, psychological distance that remote hearings might cause. And actually, in this regard, we see two sort of developments. And one is that remote hearings can actually reduce the psychological distance, because when courts learn to place cameras closer to judges' faces, you can actually watch your judge, and you can watch your judge through the hearing, and you can watch all 11 of a grand chamber judges in the Norwegian Supreme Court. You can actually watch in that they're all watching and listening carefully. And so you can see your judge and you can be seen by your judge. But then again, we know from psychological literature that remote hearings can create a distance. And this we have to be mindful of. And we need more research. And we also need more research regarding the impact of surroundings, the impact of camera angles, light, bad internet connections, etc. And here, Singapore is a wonderful example because they have created these court booths for internet connection with courts, where you can walk in there and then everybody has the same surroundings, neutral surroundings. And if there is a technical problem, actually you cannot blame the computer. It's the problem of the state, and you can then get help very quickly. So I think that's a very nice innovation in this regard. And I also think that due to the pandemic, we will start to reassess oral examination of witnesses and experts. What's the value of them? How much do we need? And is actually seeing and hearing the witness better to evaluate the truthfulness of the witness compared to only hearing the witness and compared to written reports from a witness? But we still know too little, and more research needs to be done. And also, as we have got more used to using remote technology, that might change our perceptions. So technology can breed a sort of understanding and of what's happening, and then also reduce the resistance and also produce change in our perceptions. And finally, I think we need to rethink court hearings, their value, timing, content, the balance between oral and written proceedings, timing. Because now we know that we can congregate for short hearings when they're conducted remotely. We also know that oral communication can be asynchronous, whereas written communication can be synchronous. So we know we can adapt orality for different types of cases. Maybe there are cases that need and benefit from more oral hearings, from more use of oral elements. For instance, for self-represented parties who might understand what we're saying and the hints and advice given to them might be better to given in an oral format. And then again, in other types of cases, perhaps in some countries at least, less orality can be good. So we should really stop now to reconsider what we're doing and experiment with new technology and all the possibilities, and then be open and also create an atmosphere where also failing is allowed, because if we try to experiment with new technology, we will also sometimes fail and sometimes realize that it didn't quite work the way we had wanted to, but perhaps if we adjust a little bit, it might work much better. So I think this should be used as an opportunity to actually take a step into the 21st century, also for courts and court hearings. And I think this is really encouraging findings that we have found in this regard. No, thank you.
And let me now go, ladies and gentlemen, into some main findings of this international study, the main findings on how did civil courts cope with COVID-19. Let me start by saying that one must be careful with general conclusions from the reports that we've received from all the seven countries. Going into the main findings made us really realize that one has to be careful with general conclusions, and it's rather obvious why. The impact of the virus is not the same in the various countries. The impact of the virus was varying from country to country, and also over time. The virus itself has hit the countries in various levels. And there was also a great variety of measures that the different countries have taken. So one cannot compare countries one-on-one. We simply have to be a bit cautious with general conclusions. Nevertheless, we think we can identify some main findings, some common elements. Let me now just mention a few of them. And our first main finding, I could characterize as resilience of existing rules on civil procedure. It is clear that the pandemic does influence and did influence the way civil courts were operating during the outbreak, keeping distance, not too many people in a room, etc. And government measures did have, and perhaps in some countries do have, impact on the course of proceedings, at least in many countries. Still, courts in several countries have largely been able to operate during the outbreak based on the regular rules of civil procedure. Some countries had technological neutral rules. Documents could be filed electronically. Witness testimony could take place remotely, etc. Real emergency legislation was remarkably limited. Just to mention one example, in some Australian jurisdictions, civil cases, or at least some types of them, usually take place in front of a jury. That was not possible at some stages of the pandemic. And some jurisdictions decided to replace the jury by a single judge. And even such an Australian decision was not based on changes to legislation of court rules. It was simply an announcement by the court, the Supreme Court of Victoria. So apparently, one could say that the usual rules of civil procedure, at least in certain countries, did offer flexibility that has facilitated resilience. My second main finding, we could identify a tendency towards civil justice without hearings. We could identify a slight turn towards written proceedings, proceedings just based on documents. And for some countries, this turn was already initiated before the pandemic. For example, Belgium, France, Poland. And the pandemic seems to have accelerated that process. And a third main finding, shift to ADR and ODR. In some countries, one can identify a shift towards ADR as a result of the pandemic. Peru, Japan, Italy. And it was also reported by a colleague from Denmark. Our colleague from Denmark wrote that the many postponements of main hearings have led to a public debate in Denmark on an increase of privatization of civil justice through the use of ADR. And ADR is, as we all know, of course, not limited to mediation. For Italy, it was reported that an important arbitration institute in Italy, the Milan Chamber of Arbitration, has introduced special rules on arbitration for civil commercial disputes. And in July 2020, that institute in Milan has introduced so-called simplified arbitration procedures for claims with a value that does not exceed 250,000 euro. And our colleague from Taiwan has written that Taiwan has introduced new rules on switching from court litigation to arbitration. So the third main finding I could characterize as a shift to ADR and ODR, at least for certain countries. And main finding number four can be summarized quite easily. Courts resolving disputes related to the pandemic. And it is obvious that this was a topic in many countries. Courts have been resolving disputes and are resolving disputes related to the pandemic. And it may illustrate the potentially pivotal role of courts in the pandemic. German courts, for example, have faced tides of cases wherein restrictions such as curfews have been challenged. And of course, there are many cases on substantive contract law related to COVID, force majeure, unforeseen circumstances, etc. Singapore has enacted a special procedure for obtaining temporary relief in disputes arising from non-performance of a contractual obligation due to the pandemic. Main finding number five. The most prominent and common element among the many contributions is, of course, and by far, the use of technology. All the countries involved in our study have tried to keep the wheels of civil justice turning as much as reasonably possible, in spite of the outbreak. And technology played an important role in doing so. At the same time, the impact of technology was, and probably is, not the same in every country. The vast majority of the countries participating in our study were already in the process of introducing technology in one way or another. And one of the remarkable things is that in some countries, there was technology already in place, but it was simply not used in pre-pandemic times. At least for some countries, it can be stated that the pandemic has more or less forced the use of pre-existing technology. And countries in which implementation had already progressed prior to the outbreak naturally had an advantage vis-a-vis to countries who did not. And especially if the technology was already being used. For example, China, Denmark, Singapore, Taiwan. So far, ladies and gentlemen, the brief overview of our main findings on civil courts coping with COVID-19. Let me now turn to online hearings. So the use of technology is by far the most prominent element in the way civil courts across the globe have been coping with COVID. And part of the technology is online hearings. It is clear that online hearings do have several advantages. Let me just mention a few of them, the most obvious ones. So pro number one, the first advantage of online hearings is very obvious. In pandemic times, online hearings do enable contact between court, parties and their legal representation. This was reported from many countries and is quite obvious. But one could add that there is another advantage. Online hearings simply save costs and time for traveling. Parties and their lawyers do not have to come to the courthouse. And this advantage is even more prominent in cases with multiple litigants. And of course, it's even more prominent, especially in cases where parties, witnesses or experts from multiple countries are involved. And digital hearings may perhaps have a third benefit. Public nature and public access to justice. In pandemic times, access to courthouse was, and perhaps is, limited. It cannot be ruled out for some countries. Result of the pandemic is that more openness has been created or will occur in cases where a digital hearing is held. And the use of a live stream contributes to this. Three rather obvious advantages or possible advantages. But there are also disadvantages or possible disadvantages. Because at the same time, ladies and gentlemen, virtually every contribution in our book describes some reluctance to engage technology on virtual hearings. There may be several reasons for resistance to technological innovations. And one can understand easily why the use of digital innovations is to be taken with a certain degree of caution. Let me mention some reasons to be cautious. And the first concerns technological infrastructure. A first reason for resistance is technological infrastructure of a country. Is there enough access to high-speed internet in a country? For everybody. And perhaps the same can be said or asked for access to laptops, computers. And perhaps differences per region within a country may turn out to be relevant for access to justice. One of the authors in our book mentioned the concept of digital divide. If such a digital divide really occurs, that must be taken seriously. Reason number two, but there's also a disadvantage of a different order. An online hearing is different than a hearing in real life. An online hearing is usually better than a hearing just by telephone. Not always, but usually. But an online hearing is not the same as a physical hearing. An online hearing does not match a hearing in real life. An online conference is not the same as a conference where we all are in the same room. For lawyers, judges and parties, it may be really different to see people's reactions or to get a grip on the case during an online hearing. If we speak in court, we prefer to be in court. If we deal with the case in court, we prefer to be in the courtroom. If we teach, we prefer to be in the classroom, and so do most students. So one can imagine that the judge and lawyers and parties want to be in the courthouse, and that lawyers want to be in the courthouse. But at the same time, ladies and gentlemen, this is not always a disadvantage. If the technology functions properly, and at least for certain types of cases, online hearings may function adequately. So there are pros and cons. It is not always a disadvantage, but it is different than an online hearing. To conclude, as far as I am concerned, it is certainly worth to see if online hearings are here to stay in some form. Let us certainly not replace all the physical hearings by online hearings. I would not be in favor of that idea. But let us take time to investigate. Something is here to stay. Perhaps cases where all the parties and the courts agree with an online hearing. Perhaps international cases. Perhaps cases where many parties are involved. The pandemic has caused enough misery. Let us see if we can still get something positive out of it. Thank you very much for listening and for your attention.
Very pleased to be able to participate in this podcast. Thank you for inviting me.